And welcome to the Down in Front Podcast, the official podcast of downinfrontpodcast.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us. Happy July. We have a bunch of stuff that we're going to talk about. I have never been so excited to talk about, A, one of these reviews, and B, to talk about our special guests. Before we get there, I'm going to give them some time. What we usually do here on the Down in Front Podcast is that we review movies, TV shows, all while having ourselves our favorite beverage. We are reviewing the 2 hour and 40 minute spectacular spectacle. There we go. Hamilton, streaming on Disney Plus right now. It's one of the first, right? I think this is from 2016, actually, from when they were recorded it. So super interesting. It looks like they shot it like 2 days ago. So it's nice that 4 years doesn't look like anything differently. So that's great. Before we get into our review, we're going to go around the round table, talk about what else we've been watching and what we're currently sipping on. So as always, I'm going to start it on off with the beautiful Brylin. Brylin, what you sipping on tonight? And we'll see how it's going for you.
Hey, Warren. Great to be here. Great to have a special guest as always. What I'm sipping on is I decided to go with a soft drink, so I got a little bottle of Pepsi here with me. I'm going to fill myself full of sugar so I can play video games till the break of dawn. And what I've been watching, so Warren and Blewett gave me some homework last time. And so I checked out two movies. So I saw Step Brothers with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. And I had some laughs. It was good. It was solid. Definitely, like, probably the funniest part involved centaurs and lumberjacks. And I say, I mean, it was a solid, solid Will Ferrell movie. I personally like Eurovision better. I don't know. Maybe it's Will Ferrell has to get more clever, because a lot of the jokes in Step Brothers, you would not be able to get made today for the most
part. I see your point. Interesting.
Yeah.
Plus,
it's a rated R movie versus a PG-13 movie. And I think taking away the vulgarity part of it, you probably have to get a little bit more clever with your jokes. But I still enjoyed it. It was a lot, very fun. Those two guys can play off of one another just really well. I also saw, because on Warren's recommendation, About Time, briefly I'll mention, fantastic little romantic film. Loved it. Reminds me that Richard Curtis does make good films. It's not Yesterday. It's beautiful. Rachel McAdams is still America's sweetheart. Domhnall Gleeson, brilliant dude. This guy's going to win all the awards sooner or later. And there was, only thing I'll mention about it is I was the whole time thinking that they were going to do one little extra twist for the time thing. But I'm not going to mention it here, but I am curious to find out, Warren, if you thought the same thing while watching it. So
yeah, shoot me a text. I'm pretty sure I've watched that movie. I've owned the movie. I've watched it over 200 times.
You see it in the theater?
Maybe.
I saw that after a very bad, nearly after my divorce. I literally cried for 10 minutes in my car because it was so beautiful. Like, it was so poignant. Like, if whoever's listening, if you got a chance to watch that movie, Warren was right to suggest that movie to anybody. Guys, watch About Time.
It's so good. So good. Yeah.
Yep. And I saw that on Netflix, I think.
Mm. Oh, shit. That's on Netflix? Oh, yep. Man. All right.
Also, I did, speaking of Netflix, decide to check out their recreation of one of my favorite childhood shows, Unsolved Mysteries. Watched first two episodes, and you know what? When I watched Unsolved Mysteries when I was a kid, is like one of those things that you just, you, everybody watched it. Everybody talked about it the next day and be like, oh, did you see how crazy it was that that lady just disappeared into thin air? Or, oh, aliens came and grabbed that dude. What other answer is there? It has to be aliens. Also, you had a brilliant host in Robert Stack when it came to Unsolved Mysteries. This Unsolved Mysteries is very generic, very boring. Does not have Robert Stack. Does not have a host at all. So I kind of think it loses some of its luster when it comes to that. And so after two episodes, I kind of just bowed out. I didn't really want to spend time watching the rest of it. But one docuseries I did watch was Jeffrey Epstein, Filthy Rich. I watched that the whole way through. I can't believe I did that because every moment of that documentary, I feel disgusted and gross, and I wanted to take like 1,000 showers afterwards. It is just horrifying and horrible what that dude got away with, what they allowed him to get away with, and just how the system, like whatever pool, this charm that they said he had. I mean, I don't think it really comes through in his deposition tapes or anything, but I don't know if this guy really ran on just having dirt on everybody he connected with, or was this guy that could actually, no one could say no to. And it is just kind of horrifying what these young women went through and what he did to a lot of people.
Well, Bradley, as always, it's great to have you on. It's great to see your face. I'm going to toss it to you in a second, Blue, because I know you also watched that documentary. So I want to get your thoughts on that. And I'm really glad you enjoyed About Time. I got some other movie recommendations if you're in the mood. You never know.
Oh, yeah, always, man.
Happy Feet is also great.
I don't know. Happy Feet. I saw the trailer.
All right. Happy Feet is good. I just can't watch Happy Feet anymore knowing that George Miller directed it. That's, I still can't watch that.
Oh, it's heartbreaking that Brittany Murphy is like the voice. And that's what's sad to me. Like, that's why I'm like, oof.
Do any of the penguins have a guitar that's on fire?
I don't think so. Bloy, what's going on? What you sipping on tonight? What else you got going for you? We got to get through these introductions, y'all. Yeah, we have too much of a great time here.
So, I'm drinking Haze by Treehouse Brewery. It's pretty solid, double IPA. Yeah, it's good. I officially waited in the longest line of all time for beer. We tried to do curbside pickup for this and waited in a little bit of a line. That was about a half hour in a car, like snaking around a parking lot. And then they directed us up a hill where there was another snake. And at that point, it was the sunk cost fallacy, right? We've been here for so long that we're just going to see this out. And I think in total, it was an hour and 45 minutes waiting to pick up beer. So technically, this has got to be the greatest beer I've ever tasted. It's pretty solid, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, probably wouldn't spend 2 hours of my life waiting for it. I also watched the Epstein documentary. You know, I didn't like it.
Felt like you were going to defend him for a second. Oh my!
So you know, I do play devil's advocate a lot.
All he did to listen to what he was going to say.
But I agree with Brylan that I felt dirty the entire time watching it. That being said, the documentary didn't really like tell anything that wasn't known, like. It was good to hear these women's story in like a very public manner. You know, a Netflix documentary about something that's currently in the zeitgeist is gonna get a lot of eyes on their story, and hopefully it continues. But to me, it seems like this is a halfway done story, and that's not exactly what I want to get out of a documentary. Like, there's two questions that were,
especially with recent events in Ghislaine.
Yeah. Right. There's two big questions that they didn't answer. Where did he get the money from? And who else was in all those trips? You know, and those are that's an amazing one of those two is an amazing documentary. You know, this dude came out.
His money came from the guy that ran L Brands. Some of his money.
But so that was some of it, and he invested it and then obviously like skimmed off the top of it. But I mean, this guy was arguably a billionaire, and I think by the time he was investing with Elbrand, dude, he was already a multi-millionaire. For a dude who dropped out of college and was a like high school teacher, you know, like what, like where, well, so he got hired, his first job, I think he got hired by, what's the dude's first name? Barr?
Who's doing Ponzi schemes?
No, helping
do Ponzi schemes.
It's whoever our attorney general is, Barr. I forget.
Oh, William Barr.
Yeah. Billy Barr. So his dad hired him, I think at the college that he taught at, which is kind of a weird connection, right? This guy that like a couple years, you know, was this young lawyer that was involved in like the Iran-Contra, burying that. And then 30 years later is now the attorney general for, you know, Epstein's best friend. Like there's a lot of really weird crap involved in that story that this documentary just didn't address. And it almost felt like a newspaper readout of like, yep, this guy was screwing around with kids. Like he should probably go to jail.
Terrence, have you seen this documentary? You haven't? I'm curious about it. I don't want to, you know, I'm definitely not spoiling because this shit is history, but I definitely felt like there may be some more that's going to come from a different sort of angle. I felt like this one was definitely for the victims and the story. And that was more centered and focused on, they have been living with this pain and fear for so long. Now that this fucker is dead, they can sort of come
They didn't come out on top though, because
not come out on top. They just come out but they can share. Okay. It's unfulfilled. Yeah, for sure. That's what makes it even more heartbreaking, that it's unfulfilled and they won't have that ability to get that, not even vengeance, what's fair to them financially and emotionally. Okay, I'll use justice for now, but
then it's not a good word at all. But
is that a bad word now?
Well, no, but I mean, what does justice mean?
Right? Yeah, like, it's a matter of perspective.
Correct. So I wanted to make sure, like, the shit that he did, even signing off of his estate over to his brother, so that they can't actually seek the financial. The money that they actually deserve. So I felt like this documentary is more for a story about them. I do agree with you, though. I'm sitting there like, there's a lot of shit. There's a lot of shit here that you guys aren't bringing up and you're not talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if that's because they're either A, scared, or B, they're looking to make another doc about it a little bit later on.
Yeah.
Because more and more info is starting to come even today. Now they're finding out more and more shit. So... I'm curious to see if she, what's his name? Ghislaine. Something Maxwell? Yeah. I'm curious to see if she actually gets tried now because she fled. And now that she's back, she can. It's possible.
Oh, no. Someone's going to kill her. There's no way.
Okay.
I think she's going to die. Right. I don't think she's going to be alive before the year's out.
No. So, Warren, 2 points on that. First of all, the only person that went hard on anyone, including, well, this is sad to say, because I think
it wasn't the Secretary of Transportation.
No. So the only person that like named names
or Secretary of Labor
was the groundskeeper for the island. Yeah. All right. So I absolutely cannot blame any of these women for not naming names, because they went through a ton and they probably don't want to bring more heat on themselves for this. So I'm okay with that. But the only one that named names was the groundskeeper. That's point one. Point two is they probably mistitled this documentary then, because the name of it was completely relating to his story, AKA Filthy Rich. And so you're right. This documentary, now that you say this, was definitely about them and is definitely a worthwhile watch to hear their stories. Mm-hmm. It's just set the wrong expectation, where I went into it thinking this was going to be an expose on this like absolute terrible human being. And it really wasn't.
No.
Sorry. On a lighter note, I watched Ryan Hamilton's stand up. He didn't even curse in any of all of his jokes, but he was absolutely hilarious. So I would recommend it. It's like a 45-minute, you know, Netflix stand-up special. If you're over dinner looking to laugh, you know, maybe get away from Epstein and coronavirus. I'd never heard of this guy before, and he was actually legitimately really funny. in my opinion.
Surprised you watched two things, bro. Like,
I was away for the weekend, so I had to do. I didn't have my usual distractions.
I know you had a whole. You watched a whole documentary series, which is like six episodes, maybe eight, and a 45-minute doc. Who are you, bro?
It's only four, and it's then four the stand. Episodes. The stand up was 45.
I was trying to boost up your confidence.
Oh, like, no!
I know how long.
Yeah, no. Yeah, and I was away for the weekend, so I couldn't like just sit in a corner and play guitar like I normally do to avoid watching stuff to talk about in this podcast.
Fair enough. Well, it's Blue, it's always great to have you on. It's great to see your face. I'm going to toss it over to our very special guest, Terrence. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. If you don't know this guy is amazing. Brylan, cover your ears. This guy is one of the best creatives and best people that I've ever known. And I know I make this joke a lot of talking about we grew up together. Terrence, it feels like we actually did grow up together. We started at Apple together. I think you actually before me, maybe a month or two before me or so. And felt like we were friends. We had a bunch of the similar interests. The reason why I am here and we helped sort of create this podcast was because of your podcast, my friend. Awesome. So I want to say I appreciate you being on here today. I'm super excited to kind of hear your thoughts on it. This guy's great. So I'm definitely going to be hyping you up. And, you know, this is me just from the heart, my friend. Absolutely from the heart because I'm super excited for you. So what are you sipping on tonight? What else you got going for you? I got a couple other questions that I have for you just to talk about some introduction stuff. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Warren. Guys, I think Warren is great. He's silly. I'm sipping on. I didn't understand the sipping on, I guess. I live in Seattle. It is legal to imbibe on cannabis. I am imbibing on some Afghan Kush right now, and nice. It is fantastic, everybody. Currently watching some things. I'm watching on HBO Max. I don't know if you guys know the Criterion series is available on HBO Max, and I'm watching some of the stuff on it. There's an old Japanese movie. It's a horror movie called House. It's a trippy, psychedelic thing that if you've not seen it, I suggest giving it a look-see. You won't be disappointed. I'm Chinese, everybody. I can say this because it's very Japanese. You should watch it. very Japanese horror, 70s Japanese horror. You're in for a treat. Also in their Criterion series, the only movie I of Jackie Chan's that's in a Criterion series is Police Story. Funny enough, it's an amazing movie. I think it's the best action movie of all time. And I can argue that whenever you all want to have a talk about that, let's have a chat. Right. I'm throwing out
the raid.
say it right. We can argue that. Yeah.
No, let's get through introductions. No.
Disney Plus, the Sherman Brothers story, because we just watched Hamilton, is a great documentary about two guys who wrote a lot of the music for some of the best Disney things ever. And then Waking Sleeping Beauty is another documentary about our golden era of Disney that we know from right before Little Mermaid on. They document that time. It is amazing. I went through that. So just going through some new stuff that showed up on Disney Plus.
Nice. Terrence, I appreciate it, man. Truthfully, I truly do appreciate it. I remember at one point, and so I used to listen to your podcast religiously, and probably a little bit too much, so much that I remember I was like riding the bus when I used to ride the bus to go to Apple. And there's a point where I feel like we clicked, although clearly I knew you and I knew Yamil, I knew Alex. But there are certain moments when we listen to a podcast and you feel like you sort of side with this person. Like this person can't stray can't stray from me, right? Like everything this person says, I also agree with. So it feels like I'm that person. And I can't remember what episode it was, but there was something that you literally said that I was like, oh, I don't agree with this at all. And I had to take a step back. I was like, oh, no. What am I supposed to do with my life right now?
I might have to fight. Yeah, that's
it. Yeah, I was like, no, Terrence, no. And he just kept going. I was like, I got to go back and see if I can solidify the episode. But I thought it was hilarious when we talked. I think we were Ready Player One, I mentioned this before, when Ready Player One came out, you were one of the few people that's like, bro, have you seen this movie? I was like, oh, I have. I seen that movie.
Because I had not talked. We had not talked in a long time. And I texted you out of the fucking blue. I was like, I was so mad. I was like, who the fuck could I text? Guys, I was mad outside the theater. Like, fuck. Yeah, Warren. Oh,
I was so because mad. The book is so good. And I love the book so much. Ugh. It's still, you know, most disappointing movie in the last 10. Well, let me scale that back. One of the most disappointing movies, I think, for me. There's many, many. Like, there's six this year, so I don't know. But, yeah, so that was pretty bad. Anyways, I got a couple questions for you, Terrence, and I know Brylan have a question, and maybe Blewett has. Who knows? He's never really prepared. So I'm curious about sort of, you know, what do you think has been the top three movies or TV shows in the past 2 years? And then what's your top, you know, couple of movies or TV shows of all time, just so that we can kind of get a scope of who you are and what's your taste like?
I would argue the best movie of all time is Jaws. I can, like, I think that in terms of how we talk about movies, some blockbuster that start, I could go on and on about that's the best movie of all time. I think the lists that OR always made are, you know, it's, you know, Godfather, Citizen Kane. I think Jaws should be at the top, especially our age group. Steven Spielberg being like who he is to the 20th century, right? He's the most important. Before that, it would have been, you know, another director like, you know, could have been, no, not Frost.
Kubrick, Coppola.
Yeah, them, right? Could have been them, any of them. But I think for us, it's Spielberg. That's definitely my bet, like the best movie I could say. But then I'm really big on words. So I think we say best too frequently and too often. So my favorite movie of all time is Back to the Future. Back to the Future is for everybody. It's simple, like there's special effects, but not special effects. It's story driven. There's three climaxes in the movie. Not very movies to have that. And I love that. My friend Brandon Roberts actually told that to me and I watched the movie again. I'm like, oh fuck, there are three. That's cool. It ends on a cliffhanger that is not a real cliffhanger. Like it was just, that's my favorite movie of all time that I can watch over and over again. TV shows. I guess in the last several years, to me, the most important thing that I've watched is Stranger Things. So nice. To know more about me, guys, like if I had to pick something out of the last couple years, that was my favorite because it was a love letter to all the things that I love and I grew up watching. Best, I guess before the last season, Game of Thrones.
Fair.
unfortunately, that would probably be the thing I'd say. Best TV. And it's hard because I feel like we're in a golden age of TV. I feel like since I've stopped my podcast with my friends, I kind of fell off on movies a little bit, and I feel like TV has made this ascendance and movies have kind of gone the other way. Not in a bad way. We still have great movies, not saying that, but yo, I can turn on that TV and never be bored, right? There's some weekends I'm like, I don't need to see that this weekend. And that's where it's been for me the past couple of years.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, man.
Awesome. Terrence, I got a really important question for you. I might even be crossing the line because I don't know you this well, but I did need to know, do you really like Warren?
I'm glad you asked this question. So I do, and I'll tell you the moment I did. We were watching some football game. I don't know how important it really was because I'm not really that fucking into football, but I'm sitting right next to Warren. And something bad happens to his team. And I happen to have a jersey of the opposing team. I hold it up and I tell you, Warren like got serious, right? I think he wanted to smash my head with beer, what he had in my face. And I actually have the picture of him giving me the finger while I'm holding it up, smiling. And I was like, this fucker, yeah. That he did not stab me in the throat. Yeah, that's my dog. Yeah.
So let me add a little bit more context to that story.
So he is a fan of one football team that
never
has anything good happen to it.
Shut up.
The other football team he loves, I understand school loyalties and they're pretty solid.
So to add a little bit more context to that story, yes, you're correct. I wanted to kill you. Yes, I was upset. Yes, something bad happened. But the something bad that happened was we all had put in for the raffle. And it was for some reason, we went to watch a Buffalo Bills game in Florida, and they were raffling off the jersey of EJ Manuel. And out of everybody in this fucking place, my friend next to me fucking wins his jersey. And I'm like, are you fucking serious right now? And we're losing?
That's what it was. I remember now. Oh
okay. I can't. I don't forget. Man, I don't forget shit like that. But to the point of how great of a person you are, Terrence, he actually gave me that jersey that I have hanging in my closet that night. And I do appreciate you for that.
That's friendship right there.
I was giving him shit that I wanted. I was like, fuck you, it's mine. I was telling him I was gonna mess it up. I was gonna rip it up. I was gonna like, dude, he was getting, that's right. You were getting hot. Oh yeah. You don't have to guys team. And I learned very, man.
Well, I was losing in fantasy football. It was all bad. Like, it was all bad. Yeah. Blue, you got anything?
What's your favorite type of cheese?
Ooh, favorite type of cheese is Munster cheese.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I like that. Sandwiches that a lot of people don't ask for, but it's great on sandwiches. Munster cheese.
Yeah. I like pepper jack.
Well, you're wrong.
That's incorrect.
That's okay. Terrence, I'm super excited to have you on. Get a lot of thoughts from Hamilton. So I appreciate you being here tonight. My name is Warren. I will be your host this evening. I'm currently sipping on, again, Wanamango. Thank you, Harpoon. I will be probably drinking for this for the rest of my life, probably the summer. And a couple of things that I've been watching. So I'm sticking with Perry Mason on HBO Max. Terrence, have you seen this, heard this yet?
I've not seen any yet. Any good? Yeah.
This show is solid. Really? This show is, I know, man. I was skeptical going into like a weird detective period piece.
Well, why name it after a show that's already existed? Like, why? Like an existing property. Like nobody.
I thought it was like a remake of the existing property. I didn't look it up.
Why name it? Why do that if it's.
It's based on a series of novels, and the original show, they actually changed him to a lawyer, but I think in the novels, mm-hmm. he is a private detective.
Got it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
not like a TV show that we know. It's more like what the book is supposed to be.
Yeah, I think it's closer to that. And the feeling that I had talked about is like if you take True Detective in a period piece, Matthew Rhys is fucking great. Just great performances, is super dark, which I'm a huge fan of right now because you really kind of just sit on every word and every element and you're trying to kind of piece together one mystery while 15 is right behind it. I'm a fan. I'm bought in. It's three episodes and I think it's a 10 episode series. I hope it is at least. It's very interesting. I was getting a similar feeling of The Outsider. That was also on HBO. So I'm getting a similar vibe from that. Have you guys not seen The Outsider yet? Stephen King? Oh, man.
I know what you're talking about.
Stephen King TV show that came out that Jason Bateman directed a bunch and helped create. It's fucking great. It's Outsider on HBO.
It's on HBO, okay.
Yeah. So definitely similar vibe, pretty dark. And I think it's like True Detective season 1 and 3, but not season 2. So it's definitely good on that. So that's Perry Mason. I went back and I am going through a literal binge right now, going after you, Dr. Bob, because for some stupid reason you said that Yu Yu Hakusho was better than Hunter x Hunter. Fuck you, bro. So
he got a tattoo over it too. So
what?
Have you not seen his, was it the soul gun?
Spirit gun?
No. Spirit gun? Way. He got a spirit gun tattoo. Yeah.
Okay. So. Oh, man. Changes my story, but I don't give a shit. I sat back and said, you know what? Before I give Dr. Bob some shit, I want to go back and watch. And I am binging, barreling through. I'm over like 80 or 90 episodes or something like that. Barreling through Yu Yu Hakusho. I think I'm on the final arc. And to compare it to Hunter x Hunter is just not close because it still follows an epic story and you know exactly what's going to happen to the main character and it's fucking boring. But it is entertaining. I get it. And I feel like Togashi, who was the creator of both properties, has transcended his work so much more in Hunter x Hunter, but it's unfortunate because he has a lot of health issues also with his back. So Hunter x Hunter has been on hiatus for like 6 years, y'all. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's been like fucking forever. We don't know in all the community, nobody knows if it's gonna be back, but the Reddit community is like pretty gigantic, just waiting and seeing, and who knows? Because he was actually back a couple years ago. But total, it's been a long time. So that's what I've been watching. That's actually streaming on Hulu. I'm probably gonna finish it probably tomorrow or the next couple days. But it's, as far as I know, is definitely not better by any means than Hunter Hunter. And then the last thing I want to talk about is the documentary, 8-part documentary series of Kobe Bryant called Mamba Out. Has anybody heard about this?
Heard it. I don't know where it is.
Right. Has anybody had a chance to fucking watch this thing?
No.
So already I'm pissed because the first episode premiered on Sunday. The second episode is supposed to premiere tomorrow. And there's no way to watch this thing. Unless it's live.
What did you watch it on?
I didn't. I couldn't watch the first one. I haven't been able to find it. Apparently, it's only available on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook.
Who made it? Why are they making it watch it?
It's on Quibi?
Yeah, right? I have no idea. And it's really upsetting because you are telling me that this 8-part docuseries that is supposed to be really, really good is not available for anybody to consume or to watch.
It's not official, though, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they announced this thing. They announced this thing like years, like last year, I think. But it was supposed to come out in like 2023 because he wasn't supposed to die.
How much respect he gets, like they, like his estate wouldn't let it be put out in that such a poor form, right? That's weird.
I mean, Warren. unless there's something else that's going to happen, or they're going to drop it all in one go or something. But this rollout is absolutely fucking atrocious. And it's almost as if, you know, way back when you had to like illegally stream in NFL games and you're just clicking through all these fucking sites. I literally spent almost an hour trying to find any link that shows me something besides the trailer. So I'm real pissed. I really hope they don't do my boy like this, but it's really unfortunate. I really hope something happens or something changes.
I told you 2 weeks ago that they were going to mess this up. Like I told you that they were rushing the production on it and they were going to mess it up. Honestly, did not call Facebook only, you know, rollout, but I told you they were going to mess this up.
Maybe,
and that's
they
tragic.
They thought they could get more people because, oh yeah, everybody's home anyway. If they'll want to stream it from their phones and that's,
well, at least make it available to rent or buy or at some point.
Something.
Give me a way for me to actually fucking watch this show. Even if the show is terrible, give me an easy way to watch it. I think it was at least smart enough for ESPN, of course, that The Last Dance was live, but it also was available directly after the show that you can watch it if you missed it. Or if you, I know I showed up late a couple times.
And it's fully available on Netflix now, too.
Exactly. And I showed up late to some of the episodes of The Last Dance, and I literally said, well, I'm going to have to wait until the show ends so I can then rewatch it, because I'm definitely not going to go in the middle of the show like a fucking crazy person. So I'm real pissed. I really hope something happens with this Mamba Out. Or like you said, Terrence, maybe it's not that serious. It definitely felt like, though, they put a lot of effort and money and a lot of stars and a lot of people that are being interviewed for this 2010 run for the Lakers. So it's... It definitely seems weird that if this is just kind of like one of those brush under the rug things, I found it strange.
Okay.
And with that, we're going to take our break and we're going to finally get into our spoiler section. So if you have not seen Hamilton, it's currently streaming on Disney Plus right now. I will let you know that we're going to be spoiling the show and movie. If we can spoil anything, that's a part of history. Maybe a little bit different history, but history. So we'll take a break. We're going to step away. And when we return, we're going to be in a spoiler section of Hamilton. Thank you. are back, and we, the Down in Front Podcast, in our spoiler section for Hamilton, currently streaming on Disney Plus right now. We got Blewett, we got Brylin, and our special guest, Terrence. What we normally do is that we're just going to talk about the show. So we actually going to talk about the acting's character, story, and plot of Hamilton. We're also going to talk about some other sort of heavy topics as well. So I'm really excited to kind of get into the meat and potatoes of that. Then we're going to talk about who do we think won the actual film production as all sort of the MVP before we go to our lasting thoughts, conclusions, and some sort of recommendations after we, along with what else we'll be reviewing next week. So usually I'm going to actually kind of, I'm going to switch it up for a little bit here. I want to go and toss it over to Terrence. Terrence, just open it up with us here. Let's talk to me about the acting and characters of, in your overall thoughts of Hamilton.
Acting characters. It's funny because I've been seeing a lot of different things about it, and I'm surprised. I thought Lin-Manuel gave the best performance. And it's funny because I thought it was kind of universal, and I didn't know that he is technically not a singer, right? That's not his bag. I didn't know that about him. So I think that's what a lot of people are saying. Like, they would have liked to seen a stronger technical singer in that role, that he was took. Maybe he was a little too hammy. To me, I think it mattered that he was the writer. He starred and he directed. I think that's important. And I think that carries weight on why his role in it was more important than all of the others, and how he stood out to me more than even David, the guy who played Lafayette. Like, I think he had a great singular performance, but I think if we had another actor who is just as good, which I can't imagine there is, but there is, we're not going to get another Lin-Manuel, you know, Morant. We're not going to get another one like that. I'm never going to get another sincere performance like that. I don't think we can. So in terms of characters, who can play Hamilton the best or who is the best, it has to go to him. I can't look back in any other time period of musical theater where a writer, director, and like performer was in the zeitgeist. Everybody is talking about it. He changed how we think of musical theater going forward.
Yeah,
there's things about, I mean, Lin-Manuel Miranda, we can't deny his genius for creating this. I haven't seen In the Heights, but he made an amazing musical with Hamilton. And I think some of his brilliance is just how he wrote it and how dense it is when it comes to either capturing history or making people aware of historical moments that they may not get with the textbook. With a textbook like education of the history of the Revolution or everything. I think even focusing on the New York section of the Revolutionary War is actually, even that is a huge change from what you usually see commonplace when it comes to historical dramas. You usually see the Boston side or the Virginia side. It's like, oh, Boston's where it started, yada, yada, yada. All right, Yorktown. And that's usually how they say, talk about the Revolutionary War. So it was really cool to get like this very New York centralized focus in here. But it was also really neat to like see how he just used the plot and everything to be very subversive to bring up ideas like the importance of immigrants to America, or the importance of fighting for right things even though your back is against the wall. And there's literally like, see that there's no hope. Even your leader, George Washington, doesn't see a way to win, but it just takes the right mind at the right time at the right place to find a way through some chaos sometimes. When it comes to his performance, though, I mean, maybe it's just how much energy everybody else was bringing to the table, but he kind of felt like a shy Ronnie to me. I mean, he delivers probably the most understated performance, even though he's there every single time, but when it comes to Hamilton, I mean, like, this was a very brash, like, guy that spoke for himself, was proud of himself and everything. And there's sometimes where I feel like we don't get that strength through him. And when it comes to someone David Diggs, and he just rolls on through as Lafayette or as Jefferson, and you're just like entertained, you're just smiling the whole time whenever he's on stage singing or just talking about like how cool Lafayette is or what Jefferson does. You're just like super entertained by what David Diggs does. And then Lin-Manuel Miranda just kind of feels a little plain when up against someone like David Diggs or Leslie Odom Jr. when it comes to that.
Yeah, and it's curious, right? And I want to kind of just talk on, you know, two points here. First, Brylan, I definitely get it. There's a sense of stage presence and awareness that people tend to literally glow on stage. And it's, you have that moment, you see that moment. Lin-Manuel Miranda glows everywhere. We know that he glows everywhere. He is amazing. And I think going to go into your point here, Terrence, that I think it was important for him to be the lead. I agree on both sides. I think it's important because he wrote this. This was his story of talking about sort of immigrants, immigration, and the importance of how America was created, not by somebody that was originally from this place, right? And the things that he was sort of fighting for. And even watching, you know, I talked about Dear .. on Apple TV and kind of looking a little bit more in the microscope of how much this story sort of meant to him. It took him 6 years to write. I thought that was sort of amazing and how he looked at some of the issues of how people sort of view sort of immigration and people who may not necessarily be born from here, which not many people are, or even our ancestors are from here anyway, and how people like tend to kind of stick their nose at it, you know, people who are being non-American. So I think bringing that sense of sort of personality and that that heart and that love to the actual story was amazing. And yes, Terrence, to your point, I don't think it's possible. Like we talked about Richard Rodgers, we talked about Hammerstein, we talked about all these amazing, phenomenal Broadway, these musical theater geniuses.
And do
none of them, none of them could do anything close to this. And I think, you know, we talk about, you know, in the theater business, in the theater world, at least my background studying theaters, we have like this triple threat, you know, area, but like, even this triple threat people can sing, act, and dance, that's great, but they can't write for shit. They can't block, they can't direct, they can't do any of that. Like it's a whole other side of the technical element along with the performance elements that's coming together. And that's why it feels so nice and refreshing that you're like, this dude, this guy, this one guy on the stage started with him and created all of this, of course, with other help and of course with all this other performances. But as he's sitting here belting his heart out, he may not be a technical singer. This is his goal, and it's like an actualization of what he wanted to happen. We're actively seeing as we're going through the story. So
that's why when you see what I chose is like, what is the next, like, what would you say it's like to watch? Like,
I don't think it's possible. Yeah. And it's,
that's what surprised me about this most was this was a musical ass musical like Les Mis. There's no spoken word in here. Yeah. Everything is the song that's crafted from beginning to end, and that's the entire story, and how much they were able to pack into every single song and everything is brilliant.
And that a lot of that came from him, right? So then the last point that I was going to make is I get it. You can be amazing at a lot of stuff, but there's still going to be better performers out there, and there's going to be better people around you.
Right, like, because you are right. Who I can't imagine anybody else, but there is.
Yeah, right. And I think that's, you know, and I think it was somebody worded it pretty well of like he had the weaker performance. Yeah, but his fucking performance is already A+. So everybody else is in this S tier, right? And that you have a little bit more than still in an A+. And it's something that it's really great and it's really, really amazing to see, just going back to my days of like performing, but it's really nice because everybody's working towards everybody, and even the non-verbal acting and the facial expressions and the like the movement on stage and how it was focused. And this is a movie. I'll talk a little about this later. How it was just focused, the synergy that's happening on stage so that he can make everybody else around him better truly means that he was the best performer on it, whether people like him or not. And it really takes a true genius. And I really want to see more of this with In the Heights, especially because that's a story that's way more closer to him than Hamilton. I'm really, really excited to see what's happening next and what he can do, because this dude is like now has won almost everything already. And I think he's like 35 or 40 or something like that. He's super young and has already done everything that he needed to do. And it was in like Mrs. Poppins movie roles and is doing all this stuff. So I'm like, this dude can do it. I really want to see him push the bar a little bit further now and talk about more things a little bit closer to home. Blew it.
Has anyone seen a version without him?
No.
I mean, me neither. This is my first time seeing this. And I guess I've heard parts of like the recordings for the cast, but it's the same performance. Yeah, because I'm kind of interested now because, like, unequivocally, Lin-Manuel Miranda is a good singer, right? He in the folk tradition. Sure. And I mean that, like, there's plenty of good people that are country, folk, rock and roll, hip hop that like sing with like that, not that amount of control. And then there's the diva class, and Broadway is an opera. And then like there's some, you know, like you could consider someone like Mariah Carey, who just has next level control over their voice. And that's who he was up against. And so he did stick out like a sore thumb in some regards. And, you know, in like, I don't necessarily know if his performance would have been like better or worse than someone else. Like, I think another actor could have been put in there and maybe done an like just as good as a job of keeping the class glued together. You know, like these are all A grade professionals, right? That being said, there was an honesty to it that I don't know if it, because he wasn't a diva class singer, was there. And I think you would have gotten a different story. And I don't necessarily think it would have been bad to see an entire diva class performance, right? But it was just definitely a little bit different. And I think it does speak to the kind of the overallness of this, where like he is trying to portray himself as an outsider. So it kind of fits the theme of like, well, everyone else is some diva and here's he just like some lowly folk singer. And I don't mean folk, like, but, you know, like not that level of control. Yeah. Sorry.
It's not Jim Croce up there.
Right. It's just there's a difference between someone who can sing a song and someone who can belt a song.
And Blue, the way that I felt this, and I, you know, been diving into a lot of his work recently, but the way that I looked at this was, take George Harrison from the Beatles. That dude was not a singer. He wasn't the best singer by any means. But when he sung his songs, people felt that shit because we know he's the one who created. So it was like, oh, yes, a lot of people can sing that way better than you, but he's singing it. And that goes even further to how much it deeply resonates and cares with people as they're watching, listen to his music as we're watching this movie. I do like that.
For the Beatles, none of them were diva class singers.
Like, no, not at all. Like, but George Harrison wasn't the best. Like, he was definitely not the best singer in the Beatles. But
right. Well, they still, all of them had an honesty. You'd be comparing any of them versus Aretha Franklin. You know, for like similar time ranges and all that stuff. Like the Beatles, obviously, they were good singers. They could carry a tune. They could harmonize. But they're in a. Aretha Franklin was in a totally different class comparatively. And I think I think that came through, and it was a little bit jarring to see like Lin-Manuel Miranda certainly just was not in the same class of singers. Whether that took away, in my opinion, it didn't detract from the performance. It did form a little bit of cognitive dissonance, like when I was viewing it, but it didn't detract from the performance. That being said, I can completely understand like a musical theater snob watching this and having it detract from that. And I don't think they would necessarily be wrong, because technically he is not as good of a singer as the rest of the cast.
And I'm not calling them snobs, but like, so like Warren, like before I was full-time with Apple, I was full-time actor, full-time performer in Orlando. And a lot of friends back home are saying technically they wanted somebody who was better. And I get that completely. But if you've ever, have you ever worked with somebody who is genius level, and like the level, the at the level that they work as is just different. So what Lin-Manuel was doing while they were filming and doing all that, he was talking to Disney about this. He was writing for other things. He was writing Moana, right?
Right, right, right.
Yeah. He's on another fucking level. So David just had to come in and be Lafayette. Lin-Manuel Miranda had to carry the weight of writing that shit, going to Obama's inaugurations and like seeing that. Like,
he did a lot of shit.
He had weight on him every day, and then have to go out and do that shit every day. That's why, like, as a like a performer or a creator, whatever you do, like when you see somebody who's better than you and you know they're better, you're like, shit, I got to get my shit together because, man, that guy is better than me. That's what is watching Lin-Manuel. It's inspiring in that way. That's all.
Yeah, like it's amazing. It didn't detract from me, but I can understand. I can actually understand where. So, just to give my background, I worked in recording studios in my early 20s before, ironically, going to Apple. So So we ironically have like something. So you're absolutely right. Seeing those people who there was such a difference, right? And it's not necessarily bad or anything. Like there were some folks that we recorded, like we recorded a cappella bands, you know, that were all divas, could self-harmonize, pretty much could do their own thing. And then we had like singer-songwriters who were just belting out about how much Obama's war in the Middle East sucked, you know, like so there was the gamut, and you can't necessarily say one is worse than the other. I do think it is a fair criticism to say that there is an outlier there, and it is Lin-Manuel Miranda. Didn't take away from it, but I won't hate on that opinion.
Correct. Yeah, when it comes to the vocal performances, as much as I love David Diggs, I think Renee Elise Goldsberry's performance as Angelica, when it comes to vocal performance, she just blew it out of the water. And I am kind of bummed by that because we only get a little bit of her. And there's this really cool connection between Angelica and Hamilton they set up. And I never really feel like it gets paid off that well. So we get this whole thing that they're kind of cut from the same cloth, that they're never satisfied with anything. But I definitely wanted to dive deeper into that relationship and see how his connection to her was different than his connection with his wife.
Aaron, so I'll let you continue. What else you got? Talking about acting and characters and your overall thoughts.
The relationship between Burr and Hamilton came out more in watching than in listening to the music. Watching them together, it's interesting because I feel like everybody thinks that they are Hamilton, but everybody is actually is Burr. We actually just sit around waiting. Like as Americans, I think I was watching, oh shit, we all think we're Hamilton, but we're not. We're all just like Burr waiting for our right time to do something. And it didn't stand out in the music, but it stood out in watching how they play off of each other and that they share that relationship in that way.
Yeah, that was really cool. I mean, just it starts with that relationship and ends with that relationship is just a brilliant bookend, and just the way that their lives were intertwined. I know, I'm not going to be the actually guy, or if they did do anything for dramatic effect versus historical fact or anything. I mean, who knows? It was over 250 years ago. But yeah, that relationship they build together and everything, that they were friendly or they were just very acquaintances, or it's just a very small world that they ran in. Their circles were just that tiny. It was really cool to see like how they just kind of ended up on the opposite sides of things politically, but in also in life as well.
So I one of the positives I think from watching this was I spent like half the time during the second verse of all these songs Googling these people because I think, you know, they made a great point of like, you know, George Washington is a major person. Thomas Jefferson is a major person. I apparently thought John Adams was like more of a major player when apparently he sucked. You know, like I didn't know that. And so I spent like my time just Googling these random people like Skylar, what was it? Eliza Hamilton, I guess is her, like when she died, that was her name. you know, all that stuff about like her philanthropy works is remarkable. And you never hear about that. And it's the same thing. So I guess the point, the branching off point on this one was with, they really did just work in that small of a circle where they were just constantly bouncing off of each other, which is interesting. I guess when the world is, you know, a billion people back in that point, everyone who's smart probably does double up on like 16 different things that you're a philosopher and an economist and a general and a politician, you know, like
speak three languages,
because there's not enough people for four different people to do that role, which is kind of interesting because now you can, there's people that specialize in, you know, like a single degree that only deals with this very unique particular thing, and they spend their entire life researching that, whereas these folks got the opportunity to like express their opinions on so much more. I don't know. It's kind of an interesting shift in our society. When looking back and seeing his life and all he was able to accomplish, a person nowadays would never get that opportunity just because there's so much minutia in one single field because of the groundwork laid out 250, 300, 400, 500, 1,000 years ago.
Well, even going on for that one, kind of going talking about a point of the relationship between Burr and Hamilton, it's very oddly Shakespearean, sort of Romeo and Juliet of him. In the beginning of the actual play in the show, they basically kind of go over, hey, this is what happens. I'm the person who died for him. I'm the bullet that killed him. I'm the person who shot him. And it very felt like, you know, if you've in Romeo and Juliet, when the play starts, it talks about two households, both alike in dignity, with Fair and Verona, where we lay our scene. It basically kind of just talks about, hey, this is all the shit that's going to happen. This shit's going to get fucked up. We're just letting you know. And then the play starts. And so I thought that was actually really nice, talking about that relationship between Burr and Hamilton, because you see there's, in theater, there's a blocking where, and even in movies, you have two people that are going to be standing apart from each other. Sometimes you have an obstacle, like a physical piece of furniture or a person or a drink in between them that shows them one on side of the other. And that's what we get literally the entire fucking time. And it's supposed to show that relationship from day one, like the first opening scene, all the way up until the last sort of moment with the actual shoot-off or the duel that they have. So I thought that was a really, really great, especially it was in a weird sort of circular motion. First of all, this stage, the technical elements in this, like having a spinning awesome stage, it was like, yep. Oh my God. Like to show motion, I don't want to get off track too much. Anyways, but having that relationship and showing that on stage, knowing that it's a movie, being able to still convey what's happening with their relationship, never seen it before. Ever seen it before. And it's always some weird tricks of the camera that they have to do, where in this way they did tricks on stage that still made it way more impactful, I think, for me personally. So I really hope that this brings this type of, I don't know how expensive this is for what they did. It doesn't seem like that expensive. I don't know though. I really wish they bring this type of theater to a streaming service outside of the privilege, because it's fucking difficult, and that theater only holds a certain amount of people. Whereas this, I felt, was a really, really amazing medium or area where we can actually start consuming a lot more theater, because it's so many good things are being read and written about so many playwrights that people never see, or if they choose to see, they see a watered down version in a fucking movie or a TV show that's not as good. So I really hope that.
What? Oh, spoiler alert, you will. Disney had, I think it was like a 70% increase in app downloads when Hamilton came out. You are 100%.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
think about how easy it would be to get all those tapes.
So here's the thing about that, though, Blue, because there's so many things that has to go right. And although performances and shows are recorded, there's still a sense, like, there's set changes that has to happen. There's a lot of stuff that was put inside this play that's not available in a lot of plays. It's not available in a lot of
theaters. This was comped together over 3 nights. So, I mean, maybe everything won't be as, you know, polished, but I guarantee you can get footage They have to own some of the like the plays and then have Broadway level performances. Cause like you said, this wasn't that crazy of a set. I've seen crazier sets for musical theater.
And that's the thing about it is that it wasn't as crazy. This could be doable. Why the fuck have we not been doing this for the last?
You will. It's profitable for Disney.
Well, you bring,
you will.
Well, you bring up a good point, Warren, because I mean, there's, you do have the Fathom Events things, which are always showing like things from the Met or other musicals out there that have been recorded like this. But there's one thing, I mean, this setting, I mean, the minimalism of this set plus the Lazy Susan to do the rotation to create this tension and stuff, it's a brilliant move on his part. And it's also brilliant to use this group of actors and performance called ensemble. And ensemble, their role is to be the setting. You have human actors not only dancing, but doing all these different performances that will actually speak to what's going on. Like there's one guy that's dancing with a book, and what is he doing? He's playing a book that's actually flying to Hamilton and stuff. Or the lady that actually, as soon as a gun is shot, is carrying the bullet across. And I thought that's an amazing visual. But it's also something that kind of you really won't get if you did it in like a theatrical movie. It's only something that you can actually get away with if you do it on stage. It reminds me a lot of like if you ever seen Lars von Trier's movies Dogville or Manderley, those are movies that are filmed to be stage plays. And I remember when I first went and saw Dogville in the movie theaters, my local movie theater had a sign saying, warning, this movie is shot like a stage. If that's not your thing, you may not want to see this. And I went and saw it, and I thought it was brilliant because it's basically a floor with chalk used to section off different parts of a house, and the actors just jump from section to section. And I was like, the performances are good enough for me to kind of feel what they're going for. And they really didn't do much aside from the moving around on this floor. And I think this actually shows how you can do so much with so little. Like this whole performance and production that they pull off because of the setting, because of this choice of having like the living set with all these different performers, it brings a lot more to the core of this musical, more than a lot of musicals I've seen before.
I agree. And on the note of, it's not a traditional movie musical as we know it, right? It's not Singing in the Rain. It's not West Side Story. There's two right now that are on, that you can stream right now. There's Shrek the Musical and there's Newsies the Musical that you can stream. That those are filmed versions. I think Shrek was 2006. Newsies was 2013. They're filmed versions of the stage plays, stage versions of those, same way as Hamilton was. Cuts to certain close-ups that you can't get on stage so that it translates to a screen. It works fine, right? Shrek is okay. Newsies was okay. I've seen both of those on the stage, and it doesn't translate even close. So I've never seen Hamilton on stage. I could not stop crying from the time Hamilton stepped on stage. I wept through the whole thing. Didn't happen through Newsies, didn't happen through through Shrek. This stood apart in a certain way. And that's why I don't think we can go back to any other way theater is shown, like musical theater is shown on streamed or on a screen at all. It really sets the precedent for what has to come next. We can't do it the way it was anymore. Because the things you're saying of like, oh, holding the bullet and going across, they're not theater tricks. Like that's just theater. One side of this overblown, like, oh, visual effects are so real, but man, theater hits you in just a different way. And I love that we're going back to simple, and that's what we're here at.
It makes me wonder if you would lose some of the magic of Hamilton if they went a more traditional way and made it a theatrical production, like they do with
Spoilers all the you time. Would.
And just to see like if they did recreate like revolutionary era New York and have them walk around and sing and stuff. I mean, would it feel the same?
Oh, and sorry. Well, Warren, sorry. Really, and the reason
go ahead.
Why they don't do more of this is because you can It's a union thing. You can see every version of any musical that's ever been put on Broadway. If you go to New York City, you go to library, you can watch everything. It's that if you show something on film, it's a different union. And that's been a huge thing. So this is a question I've asked before. And like, that's one of the biggest answers. If you film a live Broadway show and show it on TV, then you have to make them all a different type of union. And then like, are you paying the people who are rigor? Like, It's a lot of different things, man. So I'm not saying they can't do it. They obviously did it. But I think that's where the money and the logistics is held up. And I say, fuck all that. Fuck tradition. We got to change all that.
So two things on that one. I agree. Yeah, like this, I don't think that this could have been done. I recently watched a breakdown of Les Mis, the movie. And apparently they tried to do everything live, but they didn't do it live in one take. And when you try and exert your voice like that, like a diva for, you know, an acting session, you're going to mess with it. And that's why that movie sucks.
That's why Russell Crowe sounds the way he does.
Hold on. Louis, back the fuck up, bro. You cannot come out here and say you're going to Les Mis sucks, man.
No, I didn't say
Les Mis. Which theatrical version? There's like 15 of
the Russell Crowe one.
Pro one is not good, right? Warren, you're gonna say that movie was good,
bro.
I'll send you the breakdown link that I got.
No, I mean, Hugh Jackman's gonna
Russell
be
Crowe
Hugh
and Hugh Jackman. No, I did not Hugh like Jackman's either one of those performer. Two people.
Musical performer, but
Anne Hathaway's in that movie is.
All right, whoa. I'll send you the link. I didn't mean to.
I'll send you the breakdown,
and then you can send it to Derek, and then you guys can hash it out over this. Anyways,
okay.
But the thing is, that most of the time in these cases, the theatrical versions are overdubbed, right? And weirdly enough, apparently they didn't do that in Les Mis. They tried to do it live, but they did it take after take after take, which your voice degrades take after take after take. And I think that there was a certain sense of honesty of seeing them all in the stage together. So, and I think that as soon as you break out of the stage confinement, you go to let's make a movie rather than let's make a stage performance. And the honesty of not being entirely perfect really works in this medium. And I think made this play stronger than if they overdubbed everything and made everything a pop song. I will say this was somewhat of a negative. The first half before the intermission was poorly mixed. There was times when the vocals went under the instrumentation and you lost intelligibility. And so like, I just didn't think that like, because it's live, because they had poor microphone placement, you know, relative to a studio performance. And you were working with live people, live instruments, all that fun stuff. In the end, I guess I'll say this once again. I don't think it mattered on the finished product. I come from a punk rock aesthetic where production doesn't really matter, you know, as long as the message comes out. And it did. That being said, you know, there definitely was that to deal with. And I think that it is better to deal with live performances where everything's not entirely perfect, but everything's more human. Than if you were to do something like West Side Story, which great movie, but they probably got 400 takes on it in a studio where they could relax and come back and do it the next day and not have to worry about blocking and acting and interaction. And they just had to sing their lines. It's a completely different medium.
Two quick things. I got a question for Terrence, but I do want to kind of follow up on one of the things that we talked about, the simplicity of it. And it's not new, kind of go what you're talking about, Brylan, but I really enjoyed that they used, this is just because we can't have too many people in the fucking cast, and that's normal, right? So you tend to have to use one person that may have to play 3, 4, 10 different roles, right? I remember for me, I played 4 roles. I'm like, okay, I think that's cool, but that's fine.
Yeah.
But I think there's something really interesting, especially David and Anthony Ramos characters. David specifically playing Lafayette and then coming back and playing sort of Thomas Jefferson, Anthony Ramos playing Lorenz and then coming back and playing Philip.
It was weird when he was 9-year-old Philip, but when he got to older Philip, I was like, That's cool.
Oh, what about?
I think that was great. And I also love I love Anthony Ramos, and I think he actually was in The Heights. I think he was in like the stage performance of that. But I do like Anthony Ramos. I just thought it was nice just to see them in the same person and seeing, instead of the people, you know, you have the tech people who would dress all in black and move shit around. It's just nice because they would avert your eyes to one part of the stage while they're doing a small scene or a set change right on stage. You can see it happening. So that authenticity is coming out, and I really, really enjoyed it. Terrence, I'm curious, and I know that you're going to talk about, I'm going to chat about this when but have you seen the movie The Greatest Showman?
I chose not to.
Okay, the movie is not good because Hugh Jackman is not the best,
and I enjoyed the music fine, and I thought it was apt and really good, but then I saw the trailer for the movie and I said no thanks. I literally saw it and was like, not even going to give it a shot.
Hugh Jackman did a world tour based on this movie.
No, but Hugh Jackman's, the world tour was based off the music. Definitely not the movie at all. But I'm almost positive that that movie, because of the music, it's kind of like Rent almost. And the music has transcended everything else in that play, movie, whatever you want to call it. I'm almost positive that Greatest Showman is going to come back and actually have a Broadway performance because the music is that fucking good. It truly is.
It's Barnum. So, we'll just go see Barnum then, right? Go see that show.
Right? Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just weird because this music was so good, but they already had previous things that was happening. I'm like, why not just, what are you doing?
It's so funny, Blewett, you brought up West Side Story because I'm thinking, I watched this and thought of Steven Spielberg's West Side Story in the works. I'm like, yo, it's going to suck, right? Compared to this.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be his version of the 60s version. Because I know it because I saw Ready Player One. He is old now. I'm sorry. This is like sacrilege, but Steven Spielberg has turned into old man. Sorry, dude. He's lost the whimsy.
His grandpa.
His whimsy's gone, dude. It's okay. We need new voices, dude. This was the voice. Sam. And Lou, West Side Story, I'm sorry, dude. I don't think that new movie is going to be good. I think like that old one is the one. I'm with you.
I mean, isn't In the Heights like a modern day West Side Story in a way?
Well, that's just a modern day Romeo and Juliet, right?
No, it's West Side Story. But, they're same. Yeah. They're all coming from the same.
Right.
I mean, love. It's everywhere.
But, I mean, that's like all the other Disney things where they try and remake stuff that we know and liked from our childhood.
Well, even Shakespeare was based off of somebody else. So it's not like he was the creator, originator of it.
Some Chinese guy came up with it before that.
For sure.
Warren. Og the Caveman came up with it.
And the caveman was Chinese.
Warren.
Or black. Who knows?
He certainly wasn't white. Can I get a... but about 3,000 years later, we stole that all from you. Anyways. So... So, so Warren, to your point about playing multiple characters, I absolutely love this. And shout out to David, and then I'm sorry, man, I'm definitely gonna mess up his name.
Anthony Ramos.
No,
Christopher Jackson.
Onadoan.
Hannibal.
He
and James Madison.
So yes, exactly. So no, Hercules.
Hercules. That's right.
So the two of them played like faux multilingual characters. And they had to sing and rap in respective dialogues, depending on the half of that. And that's unbelievably impressive. And I think that it goes to a broader way where Lin-Manuel Miranda gave each character a certain style. You know, like Aaron Burr rapped different than James Madison, you know, which is a goofy thing to say in any history class ever. But they did sound like, you know, different people. Like you could say like, hey, this person sounds like they're from the West Coast. This person sound like they were Eminem. This person has like a European rap, you know, like Lafayette sounds like a lot of dudes that come out of like London and France. You know, current day, obviously not from the 1800s. They weren't rapping back then. So, and I think that's incredibly impressive from a musical that doesn't do a lot of, like, I guess, harmonic variants. They were able to create separate characters by flow rather than, like, melody. You know, there was only, you know, and I haven't dove really into this. I literally finished my first viewing about an hour before, or 20 minutes before, you know, we started this. So I haven't really dove into melodies. From my viewpoint, there was only really a couple that they came back to, and they didn't really mix them in throughout the rest of the piece as much as other musicals do to underscore certain pieces of like action, right? I know I've said this before, Star Wars, John Williams, leitmotifs, where you can change a certain motive to fit a certain mood and tell a different story than what's based on the screen. And I didn't quite get that from this musical, which is fine, because what they did was they flipped up the flow and the beat selection to underscore certain aspects of it, which is an incredibly modern take on something that's been around since Wagner and, you know, what was it? The not Lord Rings, Nublarong, his song cycle about with the Valkyrie.
Oh, the Ride of the Valkyries.
No, it's it. What is it? The Nublarong Rings or something?
Who cares?
Oh my God. Yeah, no. So basically that's like the genesis.
John Williams.
Yeah.
John Williams?
No, it goes way before John Williams. But like the yeah. Sorry, that got me. But yeah, so this whole concept of a leitmotif being able to underscore like the action, they flipped it up and did it in a very, very modern take using hip hop, probably maybe the most modern. Maybe electronic is more, no, because Giorgio Moroder was doing that before. Hip hop might be the newest genre that is currently out there right now. And to use a leitmotif in the hip hop field is uniquely fascinating.
Yeah, I think you're onto something about like the different flows and styles and everything. Because I mean, it definitely helps out with the pacing, because I didn't feel the length of this performance, which is really good sign. But it also made up for like one of my favorite moments when it's brilliant how they're able to use the songs to ramp up tension at the right moments. And like one of my favorite reveals is like, who is the spy against the British? And it's a boom, Hercules, and everybody just opens up and Hercules just comes out and he's just like, hey, it was me. Guess what? I made all their clothes and I took all their information. And I thought that was brilliant. But also like another thing about this musical that I love is, I mean, I love history and everything. When it comes to this period of time, like you usually hear about two main abolitionists. You hear about Benjamin Franklin, and then you also hear about John Adams. Those are probably the most stalwart abolitionists they talk about, pushing for our country not to be a slave country when they're first framing the Articles of the Confederation or Constitution as well. Then they talk about John Lawrence here. And the performance of John Lawrence is so passionate about abolition and why we need to treat people as equals and everything that it made me more interested to learn more about John Lawrence. And I want to see like things made about the life of John Lawrence, because this seems like he was basically a just like that outlier that you see coming from nowhere. Like he's raised in South Carolina, came from one of the most wealthy families that made all their money off of slave trade. And he grows up a pure abolitionist, and it showed. And I'm forgetting his name too. What's his name? Anthony Ramos. Anthony Ramos, I mean, is just able to exude like this passion and just the importance of abolition and why you should fight for it, even though the cards are stacked against everyone in that situation when it comes to talking about let's abolish slavery versus, oh, we need to protect states' rights because if we do abolish slavery, the southern states' economies will collapse and everything. And that became the big back and forth, and that's where the Three-Fifths Compromise came from. Is like, do you let the states get their due?
Jeez.
I mean, do you let the states get, I mean, what they need to maintain their economy, or do you change the world? And we saw that they made a pretty terrible compromise during that time. But I am happy that this actually kind of shines a light on someone like John Lawrence, so we can think about how were people approaching the idea of abolition at this time.
Terrence, what are you saying? Hello. Terrence, what did you say?
I said, you look great today.
Oh. No, I'm going to talk about slavery in a moment. Don't worry about that.
Actually, I think I can bridge into slavery for you, Warren. What are people's opinions on how hard they went on how complex these people were? I'm a little bit undecided, honestly. I think that it is very easy to view people from back in those days as very black and white, right? Like, on the one hand, like, hey, wow, they came up with the structure of our country. Like, awesome. They fought for the freedom of people from oppression. Cool. Great. Awesome. They also held slaves, and the oppression that they fought for was for white landowners, not even all white people, just white landowners. And so it's to me, it's, they kind of went in on it, but I think they could have gone in a little bit more than what they did. Well, Warren, you're shaking your head, but I mean, how much does that come up in, you know, middle school history? Where the fact that there's
more than they do here,
you think so?
I mean, even middle school history has a literal kindergarten version of what slavery is. And at that time in the history classes, they're making it seem like the slaves not only wanted to be slaves, but didn't really have a choice, or, oh, I'm a slave, but I'm good. I have a nice little life. I find it bullshit. And this is a big reason that, you know, even Lin-Manuel Miranda is coming out, and I appreciate it, and I'm torn, right? I'm torn because Lin-Manuel Miranda spent 6 years writing this story, and this is a point me and Emma was talking about a lot, pretty heavily, too. I'm torn because Lin-Manuel Miranda looked at this story about immigration and immigrants and said, this is something I want to talk about, this is something I want to write about. And he's blown out, you know, there's not everything inside this particular show is factual. He's even said that. And we know it's there's an article that somebody talks about that Hamilton is one of the greatest sort of fanfic. Yes, it's based on history, but not all of it.
Right.
And a lot of the characters clearly did not say the shit they did. So if you're telling me, and if this debuted in what, 2015 and took 6 years, so 2008, 2009, Lin-Manuel Miranda sit down writing this show, for the fact that he chooses not to have slavery as a main plot point, that George Washington is being revered so much as an active slave owner, fucking Thomas Jefferson, I don't even want to talk about that motherfucker and all of that stuff that's happening there, and to the point where you put a character in this play that talks about women and equal rights when we know for a fact that was not a thing that none of these white old dudes give a shit about. I feel like Lin-Manuel Miranda has a responsibility if he's creating this new fiction and this new narrative to the point where we're kind of creating something new. You need to bring that shit up. You need to talk about it. It's not even the fact that you didn't do nearly enough. You didn't do anything. You literally talked about it in the side. You even have moments where people makes jokes about it in their lyrics and says, oh, how'd you get your money? Oh, you're not the one who's actually picking the cotton. Like, bro, you literally write the lyrics to the songs. You have a duty. And I see, and I get it, right? I'm torn because you're a creator, and for his background, for being Latino or Hispanic and where his family came from, I understand and I get it. And I'm not trying to say that I'm going to be as, you know, as hard as him. And I understand that it's very difficult. But when we're talking about the founder fathers, the three-fifths rule, shit that we still are fucking battling with today, and we talk about all these fucking assholes who had no, give no shits about people of color. And I'm talking about multiple people of color. Also to the point where you're telling me that Alexander Hamilton and his friend Lafayette was like, nah, man, sorry, bro, you're the French. That's your war. Deal with your shit. when we clearly see this kind of laying out of the French was kind of helping out here, I find internally Lin-Manuel Miranda had a responsibility and a duty that he chose not to delve into. I'm not sure why. And he even came out and says, you know, all of this feedback that you're giving me is valid. Everything is open. Feel free. And he's actually inviting right now on Twitter. This is like yesterday or 2 days ago. He's literally saying that, yeah, this is valid. At that time when I was writing this, it wasn't on my mind. And I'm like, this is great. I appreciate your candidness about it. But keep in mind, if you're glorifying these founding fathers whose statues, and doesn't matter if you're fighting for the North or South, everybody fucking was pro-slavery. At that time, they were just creating that fucking slavery bill so that the people in the South, they could only free the slaves in the South. Those people in the North were not freed at the time, bro. So it's frustrating to me that this show has, and I literally ignored the show for a long time because I was trying to watch it on theater. I was trying to shield myself from all the spoilers as much as possible. I was trying to watch it in person. Didn't happen. But the wildfire that this show caught, and this is probably one of the highest rated reviews that we've ever done, y'all. This has like a 9.1. It's like over nines or just about anywhere that we've seen. The fact that all the music in the show has caught so much popularity and wildfire of this as being the greatest thing, and I get it, and I get both sides of it. I fear that we're being just as complacent to say, yeah, I mean, this was slavery, but like, that's okay, right? That was there. It kind of got emancipated at some point. No, we just even experienced, and we just talked about this Juneteenth that just had passed that didn't seem to, not too many people gave a shit about. But then at the same time, we wanted to celebrate July 4th. What the fuck? I don't get that. So I hear you, Blue. And I get what you're saying on that one. And I understand that it's, my point being, this was created, that's new, that was wrote, took him 6 years, and he had a choice, and he chose to put in the sides and throw away lines instead of dealing with this topic of, I need to take my shot, and I have immigration, and how I can be from wherever I want, I can come from nothing, I can come from nowhere, and still make it up. You can have that story that you want to talk about that, but you choose not to talk about shit that we are also dealing with today. I said also, not only, right? Women's rights and people of color, specifically Black people who was enslaved at this time from all these people who created the Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights, all that sorts of shit. That's something that I really am still fucking pissed about.
Yeah, no, I agree with your viewpoint that they did make it, like the comment you called out earlier with like,
I don't, oh, and I can't wait to talk to you about it.
What?
I don't agree, and I can't wait to talk to you about it.
The asides that they made about that, to me, I took that as like tongue-in-cheek versions of, hey, don't you realize that like Black folk built the country? Not like, you know, you, the crusty old white guys. I don't know. Maybe it was a different environment, you know, in the mid 2000s when he was starting to write this, where, you know, the social justice, I mean that in a good way, not like the cringy social justice warrior, but like the actual good social justice movement, like really started in earnest. You know, it's hard to not be affected by the environment that you're going through, and that would definitely be still be in more of like, you know, the post 9/11 movement, which I think impacted immigration in a large amount, which this film this film heavily touched on.
So, but even for that component, Mike, like, and I get the, you know, I understand why Manuel chose to then cast all these people of color. Right. I get it. And I understand too. And I look at that as being like the ultimate fuck you to all of the founding fathers and to the people that he is sort of portraying up. And it's a weird feeling that I have about this. It's like, wait, there's not too many people. There's not too many white people in this show. And if they are, like the king, who's played by the guy from Mindhunters, which, by the way, side note, pretty good job. Didn't know he can sing. But it's also hilarious how he portrays the British as clearly being like a buffoon and sort of ridiculous. But there's not a lot of people. White people in this actual show. Yeah.
So I heard a good quote when I was like doing some reading on this before the podcast. So 5 minutes before the podcast, and it was the story of the past told by the people of today. And I think that that really rings true, that like there kind of is like a resonance, back to that time told through a different lens of, the lens of today. I take that back, the lens of 10 years ago. And so it is kind of an interesting take, because like you said about Terrence, with the, we can't do a stage show, shot for shot, like on a set in Hollywood. We also can't drop folk stories that should have been there in the Founding Father tales. Like when you learn about John Hancock, you should learn about the people that worked for him, that made it possible for him to have the life that he could, that he could go gallivanting off to Philadelphia to go sign the Declaration of Independence. Right. You should hear those stories and how they contributed to the true like rise of America as a nation, as a populace. And so if this opens the door,
1776,
excuse me,
there's a musical called 1776. It's not good.
Yeah. I can't imagine. That seems way too jingoistic.
The movie's terrible, but the show's good.
Yeah. That's what I hear, is that, yeah, it's just a bad movie production.
It's a very bad movie. It's fun to watch cause it's bad, but yeah.
Like a nice hate watch. Terrence, you had something?
Yeah. The only reason I say I disagree in that, I think he did, you say he didn't touch on it at all. And you even brought up the point, he cast people of color to say those lines, and the lines that he wrote may not be like in your eyes, in people's eyes, not enough. He didn't say enough, but we could say that about any artist who makes something that is trying to make a point. Well, you didn't say enough about gun rights. You didn't say enough about women's rights in your movie. The point I want to say for in art, because it's art that he put out for us. When you see he has a responsibility, well, it's not his responsibility anymore. It's my responsibility as an artist. How can I take what he gave out of his heart and said, like, because it wasn't out of a meanness or a thing of he didn't want to tell that story. It's that he had a vision and he wanted to tell this story. Well, I got it. Now it's my job. If what he told out of his story needs to be taken out, I need to go tell that. So I would say to any artist who says, like, he didn't say enough, I'm on board. Let's do it. Let's tell more story. So I would rather say he didn't do enough to saying, like, he got to this point, but let's take it to the next level. So I don't want to make it a knock that he didn't do.
For sure.
That's all.
No, yeah. You're good. I look at it and I watch it and I'm still torn, right? And I go back and look at, and I'm reading his interviews and I'm reading his stuff that he's putting out on it too. And it makes me, some of it makes me upset, some of it very angry. And other parts, like, the theater person in Warren is like, yeah, I mean, look how bad and how much sexual assault was in Greece. I fucking love that show, but it's the same, it's an example, right? And it's one of these things in which I have to absorb what I had, especially in the time that when it was created, but also be mindful and aware of what do I know, and exactly your point here, Terrence, of like, what do I need to look up to educate myself on shit that actually has happened? I know slavery is bad. I think everybody here knows that slavery is bad, right? Right, Louis? You didn't shake my head. I wasn't sure.
I generally think that slavery is bad.
Not specifically.
I'm just kidding. It's an absolutely awful, awful thing.
Yeah, but like, I guess I appreciate that that response, Terrence, because I say this because I'm upset and I wanted to see more.
Right,
and that's really it. I feel like the responsibility. The part that I'm talking about comes from his previous show of In the Heights and his other work that he's done before this. And that's what's kind of frustrating, where he chose, right? He didn't tell the story, and that's okay. My other concern when it comes to it is this is getting all the hype. People are going to look at this as being historically accurate.
Correct.
And they may not look more into exactly what happened. Like, and I think that moment you were talking about blew it, like a fucking history book that's in seventh grade, right? It gives you a watered down version, but for some reason we have to memorize the fucking first whatever presidents, but we don't care any much about any of the black people up until Martin Luther King comes, right? Truthfully, that's exactly how those history books are like, oh, civil rights? Oh, this is when black people can be like, I guess they're okay. So
that's why in my seventh grade, my history teacher, Mr. Jackson, I spoke about him on the Five Bloods.
That's right. You did.
When we went into the Revolutionary War, the first name he wrote on the board was Crispus Attucks.
I mean, my seventh grade? I think this was one of the first arguments I got in talk about race was my seventh grade or eighth grade English teacher named Mr. Dunkel Hansen from Africa. And we battled it out, and I think it was one of the greatest. I mean, clearly, I got detention. You can't fucking argue with teacher, but whatever.
It was worth it.
Shit. Yeah,
it was worth
man.
It.
Oh man, I don't think I wouldn't say I was a bad student, but I definitely could not
stood your ground.
I don't like that saying either. Oh. I don't. I held my own. I threw hands.
Stood your ground.
Yeah. Well, no, I was in New York. I was in New York at the time. Oh, okay. But anyways, I digress. It's frustrating because I think he knows if he looks back from his work, he said, I could have done that now. And I wish I can go back and do that.
Right. And, but George Lucas shit, man.
Oh,
right?
Whoa. No, whoa. Yeah. That's good.
That's what can happen. Don't change the guns to walkie-talkies.
If you feel guilty about your fucking shit and you go back and change your art, don't change your fucking, don't erase your art. Tell Just them
make,
why.
Make new art.
I think what his point is exactly what he's doing now, Terrence. Yep. He literally said, yeah, it's all in the open. It's all fair. It's all fair game.
Yep.
Feel free to come at me.
Warren,
I'm not going to change Hamilton, and Hamilton is only going to be more and more important.
Hang on, Brendan, where would you go with this? I might have missed the point on, would you have made them more obviously racist, or would you have changed history? And made them very all pro abolition. I might have missed that.
I don't know about more obviously racist, but I wanted to see more reasonings of why they thought having and needing slaves was for any reason necessary. Like, if for me, if I'm looking at, and as much in this play, there's literally not one thing negative that we learn about George Washington, for example. That dude was shitting gold, and that was it. And that's all you have. And I'm like, let's take a step back. I know you shadow on John Adams. I know you shadow on just about everybody else in this. But George Washington was not the greatest of people by far, for sure. Let's slow down for a moment. And let's just start to understand some of the reasonings why you feel like people of color are not equal. And even Angelica?
Yeah.
Older sister.
Even Angelica talks about, and I was talking about, you know, people of color and women, right? Even Angelica says something about they make this side comic in her speech about women's rights, and it feels like it's just an aside. You're telling me stuff that's happening in history. I kind of want to understand some reasoning behind why you think that way now, why you thought that way then, because it helps me to be like, oh, if people can see this as those dudes are wrong, I think it will just help the younger audiences, particularly the younger audience who's watching this for this first time and may not read and pick up a book and be like, okay, we're good. That's the one thing I'm just kind of concerned about.
Yeah, the story here, I mean, it's very, very dense. And I think a lot of times when he's trying to connect the themes of this musical to what's going on today, it comes off as kind of like your social media clapback. It's just like, let me throw a zinger out there and that's it. And everybody can go, oh, look at cool you are. But there's no substance to it. There's no context to it or anything. It's just right there. But he's also very subtle about kind of keeping this story grounded where it is as well. Like, I mean, they talk about how if Alexander Hamilton doesn't get to a certain place in life, he's going to stay penniless. And at this time, he's a lawyer. He's revolutionary. He's a founding father. He's been a senator from New York at this time. He's accomplished a lot, but would still be considered penniless because he doesn't have a Mount Vernon. He doesn't have a Mount Monticello. And back then, land ownership was everything. And that's what guaranteed your wealth or the future of your wealth too. It didn't matter how much you actually earned through labor or anything. It was about that land ownership. And I like that that was super subtle because a lot of people won't pick up on that. And also I can see how people can get confused if they're looking at Alexander Hamilton with his wife and everything. And they say they're going to their family's house in upstate New York. And they're talking about them being penniless. And people are like, how are you penniless? I could see where that type of confusion could come about.
Well, even for that, and Brylan, I guess, and kind of going to your point, Blewett, like, it feels like he doubles, if not triples down, on the fact that, I mean, he has a whole song, multiple songs about it. I'm not gonna give away my shot. And there's another moment that, and it's another sort of theme or motif that's being used where, you know, somebody is so blinded by pursuing the goal that they're, you know, they're so focused on pursuing the goal that they're blinded by all the privilege, or not privilege is a good word, but the opportunities in the family and the life that he has in front of him, like a workaholic. It's a typical workaholic that's like, I gotta be focused on getting all this without seeing all the other beautiful stuff in front of you until his son dies. So I think he's also sort of telling a bit of a story of, hey, make sure you take a moment, take a step back and enjoy life. You know, that's something that doesn't seem like Alexander Hamilton did until he lost his son, which was kind of too late.
So I meant to mention this earlier, but I think it goes well with what you just said. It was, I think, one of the best decisions that Miranda made when making this was making it a play about Alexander Hamilton through the eyes of Aaron Burr. And really, you could see that, especially like those workaholic moments where like that it feels like you're viewing the main character's life through someone else, which that someone else happens to be the antagonist. Which was a really cool decision, not super relevant to the social part that you were just talking about, but I think very relevant for the character development on that.
And for sure. And I appreciate the song by Burr's song about not only his love, which was a wife of some other person, but like his daughter. And I'm like, this is like some juicy character development component that I think a lot of movies tend to miss that they conveyed very well in this play. And I really like that. I liked how we're learning about Burr as we're also learning about sort of Hamilton. Hamilton saying, I don't want to give up my shot and going up to there, whereas Burr is actually taking the time, being patient, and actually kind of appreciating some of the little things that's happening in his life. I do appreciate that, just that difference.
The whole theme of history in the show, Who Tells Your Story, is a part of the show that Blue bringing up, that it starts off with Antigonus telling the story, but it ends with his wife telling his story. Who tells your story? Who is telling the stories as we go forward? How are you telling it in a positive way? And I love that it ends with his wife telling his story. And it's beautiful. Warren, like what you're saying, how the asides of like women, like Angela could give me asides about things that kind of don't matter and he could have gone more. I think of the line where it's the Schuyler sisters and they talk about it's women's rights in the sequel. So to me, like I look at it in that, I look at that line rather than the other lines. Cause to me, he did say like, yo, I recognize women's rights and we're going to get there, but it's right now we're talking about this. So I think he said it and it was just another aside. Women got their due. For me in this show, because of the music that they got in the show that you're listening to, you don't understand when Angelica is singing about the moment she met Hamilton and guys, like, I lost my mind when I watched the staging of that, when it rewound, and spoiler, guys, I've not been impacted like something like that in theater in a long time. You can do that in a movie and understand flashback and do that, but the way they did it in theater, yo, you immediately saw Angelica at like this deep, because being adults, we all know that being adults is complicated. Relationships are complicated. You can't explain shit sometimes, and it just is. And you watch that, you're like, oh shit, that's complicated. Yeah, you fuck. Right?
And it's deep that she's Angelica choosing, actively choosing her happiness over what her sister potentially could handle. So she has to step aside. And I'm like, that's a beautiful moment.
And knowing how much Eliza loved Hamilton, and then when that song happens, you watch a woman give up, like, fuck this guy. And then when she forgives him, guys, relationship-wise, I think women, like, she got her due, and I couldn't believe the power of forgiveness was so evident in that scene. I couldn't believe when he was just saying, if you would just be at my side, and the moment she forgave and she held his hand, guys, I'm getting goosebumps. Women got their due. And I think we're going to get more stuff from all of these people, and I'm excited
can't wait.
Rather than negative, right? I want to end this like on like, man, this was fucking, we got to get more this type of shit. Sorry.
Yeah, still got 3 hours left in this podcast.
I view this as like a first step into those conversations, right? I think he told the story he wanted to tell. He could have gone farther in some aspects, but I think he told that the story he wanted to say. He also did the smart thing where he alluded to a lot of other conversations that we need to take in, like you said, the sequel, right? Like the follow up to this, when we talk about Andrew Jackson and who's this, some other idiots from that Monroe, and you know, like the next step, like the that presidents 7, 8 through 13. Yeah. Then
Andrew
we can
Jackson
have those.
The first president that's not a founding father.
Was he really?
Yeah, he's not a founding father.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that. I thought a couple before him wouldn't have been. Interesting. He's a crazy, crazy son of a gun. Anywho, terrible son of a gun, but a son of a gun nonetheless. But it is definitely like, if this musical gets more folks talking about. And like I said, these people are terribly complex, right? They did. I'll probably get some flack for this, but I think they did a lot of good in some regards. For some, in some meanings, like they set up one of the first like post-aristocratical democracies.
Warren, you know what he means. Yes, yes, they. Right. Yes, Warren, right. don't unmute. Don't be funny.
It's an experiment.
At the same time, there was terrible, terrible factors to them, right? Like most of the founding fathers owned slaves.
I'm dark. We're all like, we're none of us are perfect.
Right.
Yeah. And there's a line, and I appreciate that Terrence and Blewett, like he says it, he gives himself this line, I think one of his last songs of, I made a lot of mistakes and I know I can change. Like he puts this in the actual musical. Like I'm We're also going to bring this up too.
Right.
Well, I don't know if he's, did he say that?
I mean, I would assume Alexander Hamilton was a human.
Do you have proof, Brylan?
No, but
proof? No, but he gives himself, but he does put himself in all the shit that I am saying on this movie. I am also aware. Like I'm holding on to a couple of bits and pieces, so it doesn't seem like I'm a true asshole. But yeah, he does give himself this line. Oh, okay, I'm still a true asshole. But he does give himself a line in the movie, and I at least appreciated the insight that Lin-Manuel Miranda putting himself in this show about Alexander Hamilton. It, you know, it's curious. I looked at that moment as like a Lin-Manuel Miranda moment and less about Alexander Hamilton and if Hamilton actually had remorse about it. So for me, I'm like, who's actually saying this stuff and when. And I think at that point, it's effective, right? When I know Lin-Manuel Miranda's like, guys, I know what's happening here, but I'm still going to create this work. So that's another, just another layer of me when I watch this, which I have to watch it again, I'm sure. But this is how I watch it, of like, there's moments where the person who's playing the character sort of steps out and was like, yeah, we get it. Like, we definitely get it. I think that's also really, really effective. Not only storytelling, you see it in movies, but I think coming out in theater in this particular sort of medium, which I guess this is new, is a way more entertaining and effective.
Yeah. I just on that part, it really is hard to tell what people thought versus the product of their time. I mean, clearly there was some tons of raging racists back in that days.
You mean today?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Just less people own other people now compared to 200 years ago.
Are you sure?
I'm saying less people, not that it's all gone. Come on.
Oh, Bradley with the Spike Lee.
Don't let him.
But it is a hard conversation to have of like, yeah, who was a good guy, who was a product of their time, and who was a bad guy, and is it a fluid thing? Like, do people, depending on what comes out in certain writings, do they go back and forth? Like, it's an impossible question to answer. And I think even to this, like, so I'll give a recent, you know, thing. I've never thought about gender identity before 5 years ago. And you could probably say things that I said before 5 years ago were terribly bigoted. And this will never happen because I'm not going to get this famous ever in my entire life. But if someone wrote a book about me in 250 years, I probably would look pretty bad based on my MySpace posts from 2008. You know, like it's.
Oh yeah,
that's not what I currently
don't post
think.
My Twitter history.
Right. So, well, it's a man from the South. You probably shouldn't say that. Excuse me, a white guy from the South.
But I'll admit, I've quoted Paul Mooney on my Twitter feed before. So,
Negro Thomas.
Love that guy.
No, Blue, and I hear you as a person that's going into a profession that's I'm not going to say secrecy, but you know, being a clinical or a therapist, I know people are going to Google the shit out of me and look up all this shit. And I'm like, that's okay. I don't care. Right.
Yeah.
But I do know that, you know, and I think that was kind of the point where we talked about 2 hours ago, when we were talking about Step Brothers, when we were saying, you know, the different types of comedy that's been created, it's the same thing. Right. And if somebody does try to call me out on something that I did 10, 15, 20, whatever years ago, I'm like, okay, I did it. What's new? Let's talk about it. Let's bring it up and let's try to figure out what makes you upset about something that I've done in my past and what happened in that time. That's sort of how I feel about him writing this play. And I'm pissed that he didn't do this, but he didn't bring it up. He didn't write this in 6-7 years ago. I clearly can't change this, what's happening right now, but I'm just kind of expressing my frustration of what's happening beforehand. Right. So it's, you know, having that sort of ability to be like, yeah, that's why I'm really appreciating him being humble and owning up to it, and not like, blah, 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 or like, you know, fucking J.K. Rowling, for example. Fucking problematic, bro. So it's like shit like that.
Stop, Jesus. Yeah.
Stop. Just fucking stop, bro. Just stop. Like,
shut up.
can we agree right now that Twitter is probably the worst thing that has come out?
It's the worst place to kind of defend yourself. I mean, just let the madness be.
Like, well, I don't know why did Apple Notes application became like the standard for apologies. What the fuck? What happened?
People like to write that note and then screenshot it and then just post it. It might be just the ease of posting.
No, because you can get around the 140 character limit that way.
Yep.
And
yeah, I get that, I understand. It just came out of nowhere at one point.
Well, hey, have you ever talked to Anthony Benway? You don't want to be.
I think it's
poor
cool
by not having an iPhone.
I'm not. I'm not gonna.
We should dig up his Twitter history.
let's move in before I want to give this last comment to Terrence before we move into our next section.
Oh no, I was going to agree with everything. It's okay. We're good.
Cool. You agree. Perfect. He agrees with me. We
don't need to. No, because I'm going to edit that to make it you just saying that after everything Warren says. So now.
So let's move into our MVPs, y'all. So we finally have made it out of that section. I want to hear, you know, some quick thoughts on who do we think has, who's the MVP? I'm talking Kevin Durant crying meme. Who do we think kind of won this sort of film, won this production? And I'm going to toss this out, and I haven't seen the notes, but you can't say Lin-Manuel Miranda. We know. He fucking won this. We know he won this. We also know that Disney. We also know Disney Plus. Disney sort of won too. So I want to hear about other people other than those two entities. Blew it.
Yeah.
Wait,
so
besides him and who else? Him. Who are we?
Disney. As like a corporation, but Disney wins every day. So you know
that mouse.
Except for Lion King, the remake. Anywho.
Bro,
so
I was gonna say I got a laundry list of shit. They do not win. But okay, have you seen Lady and the Tramp remake, bro?
No, I refuse.
Woof. See what I did there?
Literal so, wolf.
Anywho, in the first half, I would have to say that Christopher Jackson's George Washington won. He was such a commanding figure, like Warren, like you said, where like no one called him out on his stuff because he kind of commanded the room that I didn't feel any character could call him out on it and be consistent with their characterization in the screenplay, because he was just that commanding of a voice, and it was a brilliant performance. I will have to say though that Jonathan Groff's what was he, King Louis, King Charles, George,
King George, yeah. III.
It's history. I don't know rating. Anyways, so his King George was phenomenal. The way he started, the John Adams like monologue he sang was unbelievably funny. It brought back themes from the first act. He did the weird spit thing where like he was just like drooling on himself. Like that was an awesome touch. Definitely the second half.
Scattered half of his songs.
Yeah. Definitely the second half, Jonathan Groff killed it for a small bit performance. Like obviously we can say this cast was four people and three of them played multiple roles, so it's kind of hard to choose for like those, but for the people that only played one role in a little bit of it, those two stole the show for me.
I agree, his character was ridiculously fun. Brown, what you got?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, there's a lot of individual standout performances, but I got to go back to anybody that was part of the ensemble, just because they make this whole set and world come to life. It's very rarely that you see things like this, and it wasn't like your standard, like, let's dress the stagehands all in black and have them move around the set pieces during the stage. Integrating the performers on stage with the set changes and everything, and also moving the, just making the set come to life with the bullet moving or the book moving or anything. It was brilliant. I think that's probably the most genius part of this film, of this musical.
It's a film.
Film musical.
Musical. Noise, bro. so stupid. Terrence.
Man, I think I had written down Lin-Manuel, but I was been thinking like who would I have, and I think Philippa Soot, like the who played Eliza. Her moments, I feel like I mentioned them, of her like burning the letters and saying like, nobody gets to know what I really thought. And then coming full circle and forgiving him, like those moments, she's MVP in terms of like that for me. Jonathan Groff was the biggest surprise because his songs to me were funny, but he played them so evil, so sincerely as a bad person that I didn't crack a smile. I was actually chilled by how seriously he was singing that song the first time. The first time I was like, yo, he's singing this seriously as if he really hates America. And it was very visceral to me. It was really interesting. So Jonathan Groff gets like close second to me, because even his scat that you say that he was saying he was doing, you could tell as an actor, he had words to every one of the scats that he was doing. He was saying something about America with each of those. And I was shocked. I didn't expect any of that from that number or any of those numbers that he gave. So he gets my honorable mention. Sorry.
No, you're good. Yeah, I think you took mine, but it's okay. Philippa Sue absolutely crushed it. I think the Burn song that you talked about, Terrence, was amazing. But there was a song that happened before that. I rarely get chills. I think watching Beyonce or Whitney Houston, there's something about her voice that I sat there and was like, why have I never heard you anywhere else? And so I'm doing some Googling and I saw that Lin-Manuel Miranda have a recording of How Far Will I Go from Moana, that Philippa Sue song, that I'm about to go ham sandwich in this, because her voice was ridiculous. It's so powerful. She overshadowed anybody else's singing ability in this play. I don't think it was like by far, but a large margin. And I just thought it was great. So that's definitely who I really hope I would love to see her in more stuff. I just hope that she has the opportunity.
I actually thought Renee Goldsberry had the most powerful voice in the whole thing.
Me too.
That's okay. You can be wrong. That's okay.
You'd be totally right.
You're wrong.
I wanted to process her what she's saying, and Skylar Sisters is great. Satisfied is good, but like, yo, man, I'm with you, Warren Byrne.
Yeah.
She just carries that. It's tough.
It's nice that we can be split on something, y'all. We've been agreeing way too much tonight. I hate it. So let's move into our lasting thoughts, our recommendations. Would we recommend watching this film? I'm pretty sure it's going to be a yes for everybody, or probably at least for Blewett. Who knows? But I'm curious to know, what's something else that you may tell people to check out in either preparation for Hamilton or after they've watched Hamilton? Do you want to say, hey, you may want to check out this either musical, movie, or read this book? I know we're telling people to read. Brylan?
Yeah, so yeah, I'll definitely recommend this musical. Utterly fantastic, brilliant. Lin-Manuel Miranda is, like we've all said, has set a bar for what musicals should be going forward. And I would say, aside from this, this wouldn't really get you ready for Hamilton or anything, but I really like offbeat musical films. So one of my favorite is Dancer in the Dark by Lars von Trier, starring Bjork. So definitely check it out. Just because the only thing I was kind of miffed by was how they shat on John Adams, check out the HBO miniseries John Adams, starring Paul Giamatti. It's actually fantastic, and it shows that John Adams, he was a masshole, not an asshole.
There's no difference.
I absolutely recommend this. It was phenomenal. Completely makes sense on why this was a worldwide phenomenon. That I never got to see on stage and probably never will, because coronavirus will never leave us. As for recommendations, from a weird musical that probably people won't know, Ziltoid the Omniscient. Go check it out, folks. From Canadian heavy rock or heavy metal rock musician Devin Townsend. He purposely went off his bipolar medication and wrote a musical about an alien coming to Earth for the perfect cup of coffee. Obviously it's heavy metal, so if you're not into that genre, you're probably not going to like this, but it is a phenomenal look at someone who is going through a lot of isolation and self-doubt. Which doesn't have a ton of themes with Hamilton, because it's kind of like the opposite that happened. But it is a little known piece of work that is one of my favorite albums of all time. And he did the whole thing himself. Absolutely everything is him in it. Yeah, Ziltoid the Omniscient.
Surprised I didn't go with Orgasmo or Cannibal.
No, so Cannibal actually has a like hardcore music theory joke that, so what was it, Trey was a Berkeley guy, and yeah. So like they come into this part, they like harmonize, and he's like, no, you flatted your third, but we're singing in a dominant, so like you should have sharped your third or had it natural. Like, no, I thought we were in Dorian flat two. It's like, I know what those are. Music, you guys don't. But yeah, no Ziltoid.
I need you to spell that for me, please. I'll tweet that out. Terrence?
100%, 10 out of 10, you should watch this. No, I think everybody should watch this. I don't think it's, if you like musicals, I think it's important that everybody watches this as soon as they can. I have to say that out loud. I think everybody should. The thing that I can compare it to, or like get you ready to understand what you're watching, because of who wrote, like, why, of all the things, I think you have to watch something like by Charlie Chaplin, that it was a singular vision. He put it out there. He directed it. He wrote it. It would not have been anything else without him. So you can point to any of those people, the Jackie Chans, the people who push, you know, things that nobody else will do it like that ever again, that type of thing, or they set the bar. So watching something like that, Great Dictator. But if we have to go with musical, like in the most recent time, I would say watch Sing Street.
Oh my God, Terrence, bro. Oh my God, I love that fucking movie, bro. Oh my, are you serious right now?
Okay, guys, like there's a few people who've seen that. So
Warren talked about this movie for like a year.
It's so good.
Like my anthem, like it's on my interview, like on my playlist that I listen to. Like it just gets like, Drive It Like You Stole It. Listeners,
yes.
Song, it's gonna get you so
oh my god.
Watch that movie. There's an exuberance to a musical that is, that's why you watch musicals. It's kids and it's beautiful. Sing Street, guys, watch that.
Oh my gosh, Terrence, yes, bro. I need you on more episodes, my friend. Man, I love that. And it's like, it's also I think it's based in Ireland too, so it's just so fucking good. It's so
yeah.
Good. So good. Man, completely, I lost my thought on that. Yes, I will definitely recommend this film also. I just want to see more of this. I think I've watched a lot of this stuff. I've been trying to find more and more sort of theatrical sort of plays. I don't know if any of you guys saw, you know, Fosse versus Verdon, Fosse Verdon on a thing like FX, you know, not quite a theatrical play, but it's close, right? It's a TV show that, and definitely has a lot of these sort of over the top elements. I kind of hope if this is our introduction to a new genre, a new move, that I'm fine with it. Like, I think Dear Evan Hansen and Book of Mormon could be another two that I think people would absolutely fall in love with the music, and then the play and the stuff, the ridiculousness that happens in those shows. Well, sorry, the ridiculousness that happens in Book of Mormon, sorry. Dear Evan Hansen, I think, is super prescient and super pertinent, especially what's happening with, you know, not only today, but in the last, you know, 10 years. Even talking about the last 10 years, I think there's a playwright, his name's Robert, he wrote The Last 5 Years and Parade. I gotta look up his name in a second, but
The Last 5 Years. Oof, I can't.
Oh, so good. Anna Kendrick, that's another one that's, I think the last time, I think it was on the Netflix.
I can't listen to that music without, I can't watch that movie ever again. You guys,
beautiful.
You
are, it's beautiful. No. Beautiful.
Guys, don't do that.
It's so good. It's so good.
La La Land's a musical you like, Warren.
Oh my God. I own that movie. Here's the thing about that, like, and I, you know, going, if we're in my recommendation,
I would not recommend musical it is.
Right. I wouldn't recommend
La La Land. Stage musical.
Like, well, I wouldn't recommend La La Land. Yes, I love that movie a lot. I own that movie. I will back that movie and defend that movie from however much I can. But I don't think I can recommend it because this is doing something a little bit different. I want to go towards more traditional, as much as possible, a more traditional musical or theatrical sort of performance. That one, I feel like it was sort of a spectacle. I love Chazelle. Chazelle knows I love that man. But I think that's just a little bit different. I think that's definitely kind of centered more around a movie. And I'm trying to find more that's more pieces that is closer to sort of a stage play. So I think that'd be cool. And if you have the chance, if you want to dive into something weird, check out, I think, Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman and Tim Roth and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Yes.
Oh, no. Excuse me. Waiting for Godot. My bad. Great. I get those two mixed up. That's Waiting for Godot, right?
No. That's Rosencrantz. Gary Oldman and Tim Roth is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, I think.
Tim Roth and Richard Dreyfuss. Oh, I've seen that movie version that you're talking about.
Gary Oldman, Tim Roth, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Okay, Rosencrantz.
And Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, okay. So that is Rosencrantz. Okay. So yeah. If you're curious about like how I think it will be cool, but probably not that crazy, check out that movie because it's an introduction to a lot of crazy elements. It's a theory of evidence, a theory of the absurd piece that sort of turns. Is right, yeah, but it turns sort of what's up,
yeah.
Sorry, you good? So it turns like the world upside down and just talks about things maybe in a nonsensical manner. But I think it's interesting because they spend a lot of time on a bunch of different sets and it's almost as if they're walking from set to set. So I think it's an interesting component that just introduces other elements of where things could go. There's another release that is film that's called Happy Days. That's by a playwright called Sam Beckett, where a woman is in sand for the entire fucking play. And it's really great because she's talking about memories that happening from before and talking about her life. So lots of things to talk about, lots of things that we can sort of bring up that we would recommend.
I can't believe you just said the word set. I am rereading Waiting for Godot. You said Waiting for Godot, and I was going to say something, but you said another play by him.
Yeah.
I'm reading Waiting for Godot again because
so
I
good.
That should be done in some way now. It's such an yeah. We'll chat another time. Sorry, guys.
No. That I love that show. That's one of like that. So that Happy Days and Crap's Last Tapes for sure. Like three of his pieces of work for Beckett that are, I think, pretty fucking amazing. Like. By far, it's pushed he didn't create it, but it brought about the theater of the absurd of what happens if you remove God from some place. Like, what happened if you remove rules, if you remove language, if you were just remove beings, right? Like, how are people are going to interact? Are they even people anymore? It asks a lot of questions that I think was always helpful for me when I was learning about it, of how I find myself and how I view myself in this world. So, that's just super tangent, but basically, go study theater, you nerds. Do it. You'll enjoy it. And with that, whoo, guys, we made it. We have been the Down in Front Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining. Yeah, we're almost at 3 hours. Brylan, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
You can find me eagerly awaiting the 8-hour director's cut of Hamilton that Warren Jackson's producing on Twitter at Brylund, BRILUND. You can also find me posting many movie reviews on Instagram at I Am Brylund. I recently put some up for Westworld Season 3 and Run. Check them out.
Blue, where can people find more of your work?
Yes. So you can find us at My News Music and My News Band at most major platforms. No new music, no new band because of COVID. You know, it's just kind of sucking the fun out of everything. That being said, I'm having a blast staying at home, wearing my mask, like you should be too. You can also find us online at soundingfathers.com. It's kind of like the Founding Fathers, except with a whole bunch more sounding. Oh, sorry. No, that's sorry. The joke is, no. Jesse Rand is a sounding father. That's the joke. I'm sorry. I left out the, it's Jesse Rand is a sounding father at youtube.com.
Also heard Jesse Rand is putting on a one-man performance of Equus in his bedroom.
Bro.
He actually
who's playing the horse?
I just without the horse.
Actually, Jesse Rand is actually doing a one-man performance of historical figures. He's doing The Day That Robert Taft Got Stuck in a Bathtub by himself.
Parents, where can people find more? Are we going to cut these assholes off? Where can people find more of your work on the internet?
I OnlyFans slash just the T-up, Pornhub slash just the T-up. Look it up, guys. You'll be surprised what you find. That's not real. Don't do that, guys. It's not real. I'm not doing anything right now. This was a guest star appearance. I'm really happy to be here. I hope you're on here more. Yeah, but you can find me on Instagram. Yeah, I love meeting new friends, meet new people. If you want to talk to me about movies, because I'm going to add these a-holes right now, because I don't know you guys, these two dumbies I just met, and I can't wait to make friends with them on social media. And yeah, find me on social media. Terrence Yip.
Okay, thank you. Absolutely. What's your handle? Check out more of our work at DownerFriendPodcast.com.
Yip is my handle. That is my handle, just the T-Yip.
Oh, okay. And it also is pretty amazing.
That's cool.
See if you can post in the show notes if I can remember. Check out more of our work at downandfriendpodcast.com, where you're going to have our video teasers that we have, or some recordings we have, some new information. We created a new section of the Down and Friend Podcast Conversations. Our first one was for Black Lives Matter and the Blackout, so definitely go check that out. You can find that on our website. We have our last calls, which is going to be our unedited sort of hilarious moment. Hilarity ensues. Moments here, so please go check that out. Or just about everyone on social media, Twitter at _DAFP, Facebook.com/DownInFrontPodcast. We have a subreddit that I am super behind on, but good thing I'm taking a break from the podcast so I can update it. So, that's going to be great. And so all of our cool music that's going to be on for SoundCloud, so SoundCloud.com/DownInFrontPodcast. I mean, anywhere and everywhere we will be. I would tell for all of our patrons, subscribers, and we want to say we appreciate it. We will be actually looking to be pausing that indefinitely, just because with the virus that's happening, we don't want to take any of your money. We appreciate it, but keep your money and save your money, or donate it to to another charity that's going to be the better than us, because we all know that once we get that Arizona sweet tea and Arizona iced tea scholarship is going to be great.
Warren, I'm sorry, I didn't agree to that. I thought I was getting paid. I would like my
that was not in your contract, my friend. We are, thank you everybody so much. We are excited. Terrence, I thoroughly, thoroughly appreciate that. I feel like we had a really great conversation. I'm really saddened though that Mocha's not here, but I'm also glad because it would have been a 4-hour.
Oh yeah, so, probably
would not actually, be able to Mocha does not have any opinions on Puerto Rican musicians. at least as far as I know.
Jesus, let's end the show. We're almost there. Yeah. No, Riley, what's our next review?
I'm glad you asked, Warren. So if you go to Twitter, if you go to @_DIFP, you can always find our weekly poll posted for the next movies we have up for review. And we have gotten a lot of votes in, and this is just the first night. It's amazing. But our four movies that we have ready for you to vote to help us out for our next review, we have Greyhound on Apple TV Plus, which is a new Tom Hanks World War II film. We have The Old Guard on Netflix, starring Charlize Theron. And we have Palm Springs on Hulu, which is an Andy Samberg film. So I'm sure that'll be funny. And then Mocha always is nominating this thing called Desperados on Netflix. I have no idea what that is.
All right, everybody. Get the fuck out of here.